I started on the 17th of February at Santa Monica Beach in LA, California. And I'm walking to Times Square in New York City, so across the United States. And again, a new Guinness World Record barefoot to raise awareness for men's mental health.
Welcome to the Restore to Explore podcast from the Foot Collective. We're on a mission to empower humans to restore their natural health and function from the ground up, so we can all explore movement and life with freedom and confidence.
Alrighty, Anton, thank you so much for joining us on the Restore to Explore podcast. It's a big ask after the big days that you've been having to strap you in for an episode, but yeah, we're really honored to have you on the show and can't wait to share your story with everyone. So for people who don't know, let's just start with, where are you? How far have you walked today?
Oh, I actually just got to Baker, which is in the middle of the Mojave Desert, about, I would say, like 140 k's before Las Vegas. It's a very small town. I think back in the 60s, it was booming. Right now, not so much. But it's pretty cool, though. I like it. It was a short day today, only 10 k's. Just to get to Baker. Tomorrow's going to be a big day again. But
amazing.
Yeah.
And where have you walked from? Where are you walking to, and why?
So I started on the 17th of February at Santa Monica Beach in LA, California. And I'm walking to Times Square in New York City, so across the United States. And again, a new Guinness World Record barefoot to raise awareness for men's mental health.
What does that world record entail? How do you break a world record, and what have you got to do to break it?
Well, I funny enough, I set this world record myself in Australia in 2021 by walking 3,090 k from Cairns to Sydney. And basically, what I have to do for that world record is, you know, just keep track of everything. So I've got this GPS tracker on me. I need, you know, of course, all the media. We have a little puppy as well. Since a few days, he needs a bit of extra attention. But yeah, like I need to keep track. So get signature from people that I meet along the way. Of course, all the media that's covering it, you know, counts as evidence. So by the end of this walk, I need to collect all the evidence I have from every single day. Just, you know, send it to them, and they're going to go through it and make sure like everything is legit. It's mainly the GPS maps. So, you know, wherever I start walking, I put the GPS on. It just follows me along wherever I go and how far I walk, how long it's taking me, my breaks. And that counts as evidence. So it's,
It's something that we encourage everyone to do here at the Foot Collective. We're big endorsers of getting out and walking barefoot. We definitely don't encourage people to walk as far as you are currently walking. Yeah. But there's a deeper reason behind why you're doing this. And yeah, I really want to get into your story to start with. Can you tell me a bit about who Anton is and, you know, how he became the Barefoot Dutchman?
Yeah, well, that's a bit of a story. So born and raised in the Netherlands. I've been in the Dutch army for 10 years. I've been on 3 tours to Afghanistan. I actually worked alongside the Australians in the south of Afghanistan as well. And after my, you know, 10-year stint in the army with 3 tours, I thought by myself, you know, I've done enough, seen enough, time for a new adventure. And I was traveling a lot already, and, you know, that was my go-to thing, just grab a backpack for 1 month, 2 months, Asia, Africa, everywhere. And while traveling, you know, I realized a few things, and one of them is that, you know, the realization of how lucky and blessed I am to be born and raised in a safe country like the Netherlands, but also that I was living in this 5-star country. You know, we have everything. The best hospitals, the best roads, but you have to live to that as well. There's a price tag to it, you know, like, and I was feel like while traveling, I was feeling like I don't need everything 5-stars. You know, I'm actually more happy when it's a little bit less. So I have more space to actually live. So I decided to sell everything I owned. You know, I even had a 65 Mustang, which is my boyhood dream, sold it to go on this world trip, to travel as long and as far as I could, to fall in love with the place, that I could feel like a better balance. Instead of living to work, I wanted to work to live. And I ended up starting in Australia, and I ended up never leaving Australia. So I fell in love with the country straight away. I stayed for 7 years, and that was it. So the whole trip, the world trip, got canceled. But I definitely found a better balance over there with, you know, working to live instead of living to work. But within those years in Australia, like, my mental health kind of caught up with me as well. And I think the traveling at first, even though I loved it, it was also a bit of a distraction, I think, for things I actually needed to focus on. All of a sudden, I had no more goal. I had no more purpose in life. I was just doing whatever. At some point, I got heartbroken, and that was like the catalyst of it all. Then, like, I had financial pressure because, yes, I sold my apartment in the Netherlands, but definitely not in the right time, which left me with a big financial debt. You know, at a certain age, you think, oh, who cares? I'm at the other side of the planet, until it's actually right in front of you. So this financial pressure, which is just like heartbreak, something that we all have to go through. And I was in a work environment that, you know, at first I was feeling good with, you know, good money. Construction in Australia is pretty good. But then all of a sudden I was like, okay, but now I'm stuck in this job because now I have this financial pressure. And all of those things combined got me in my mind so much, like in this negative self-talk, that my body started to respond. And all of a sudden I found myself, you know, hyperventilating. I found myself, you know, getting into these panic attacks. The panic attacks become that severe. It started to feel like I was getting a heart attack. And all of a sudden I could just burst out in tears on a construction site in Australia. And if there's something I taught myself, you know, crying as a man, that's a no-go. And definitely not, you know, in an environment like construction in Australia, which meant I couldn't work anymore. And not working in one of the most expensive cities in the planet, Sydney, means I couldn't afford a living anymore. And I found myself at 31 years of age, and not that age matters, but it sometimes can definitely feel like it, back in a hostel in a 6-bed dorm, sharing my room with youngsters that they're absolutely frothing on life. And here I was just sliding into a depression.
It's a pretty big switch up from, I guess, the relative safety you would have felt being in the army, still probably in a dorm, but it's a different kind of, I guess, you would have felt trapped.
Yeah, for sure. Like the walls, it literally felt like the walls were closing in on me. As in, like, when you're stuck with that negative mindset, and your body's really starting to feel the effects of it, and you're there in your bunk bed, where normally you were just absolutely loving life, and now you just don't feel anything anymore. You know, it just becomes like this dark cave where the walls close in on you. And it was just making it worse. Like, not having the right living environment just makes things even worse. So yeah, just Murphy's Law. Everything happened at the same time. And I didn't know how to deal with it.
Did you have friends? I mean, I was just going to say, like, obviously you're a long way from family. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Did you have friends? Well, I definitely had friends, but they're like your backpacker friends, you know, like, so at the time they're really good mates. But one of the first things you do when you start to mentally, you know, struggle with yourself or emotionally, you start to push people away because, you know, you don't want to be this, you know, negative cloud around everyone else. I could be in the living room full of like friends, but still feel lonely and just walk away. So at some point I just started to distance myself from everyone that I know. So it's funny, like, you can be around people but still feel lonely. Worst thing, you actually feel more lonely than, you know, when you were with the right people. When you're completely by yourself. So yeah, it was starting to work against me, and I just didn't know what to do anymore except for go outside. You know, I was living in Manly. Absolute paradise. You've got Manly Beach with the promenade rocking next to it, going next to it. It's like a stretch of 2.5 km, not long any longer, from Queenscliff to Shelley Beach. And all I could think about was just to walk. And I started to pace it up and down. So for like this stretch of 2.5 Ks. And I was just every day, I would just pace it up and down for hours and hours and hours. Because at least I had no walls closing in on me. I felt like even though I didn't know the people, but there was people around me, so I felt less lonely. I still felt like a bit of a connection. And I could physically tire myself out, because one of the worst things was being awake at night, because that's when it becomes really quiet. You get stuck with your own thinking. So I just started to tire myself out so I could at least fall asleep. It's thin life. And that's what I did for weeks to months on end, just up and down Manly Beach. And the crazy thing about it is that I was usually the guy that people would come to for good advice. You know, I was absolutely loving life. Because of Afghanistan, I knew life could be over within a second, because the things I've seen in the world, I was like, but I get to see all this now. I get to be here. So I would fully enjoy like the sunset, the ocean, the beach, you know, the people I was meeting. And now it started to work against me. I know I needed to feel something. So I was looking at the ocean, but I didn't feel anything anymore. So it started to work against me. So I started to become really frustrated with myself as well.
I mean, it's really hard for people who haven't been in that position to understand what you were going through, but just saying that you walked all day, every day, so that you could sleep at night without the thoughts going on in your head. Do you think one of the hardest parts through all of this was that you didn't have anyone to really talk to about this? Is that what was compounding the situation?
I think it was more telling myself I didn't have anyone to talk to. As in not feeling safe, maybe confident enough to share whatever was going on with me. I didn't have the tools because, you know, it sounds very cliche, but because I am a man, we are just raised differently. And I'm not saying that I had a bad childhood, but, you know, because of the masculine environment I was in, like the army, now working in construction, I was taught, don't cry, man up, like a lot of us. So I just kept telling myself, no, you don't have an issue. You don't have a problem. You know, and even if you have a problem, you're a man, you're ex-military, you'll solve this yourself. So I think there was a lot of opportunities for me to chat. I just didn't know how to. I had one really good friend though. So basically, when I hit rock bottom, I decided to go to North Head, which is like a beautiful viewpoint on the northern beaches where you can oversee Sydney. You can overlook the ocean. And I went there quite a lot of times to actually, you know, enjoy a sunset. And because I was so frustrated with myself of not feeling anything anymore, I decided to walk up to North Head to enjoy the view. And as I climbed the fence, which you just do because, you know, that's what you do there to enjoy the view. Again, I didn't feel anything. And instead, I looked down and I could understand why you can take the very last step. And not saying I wanted to die, but I wanted the pain and that endless long dark tunnel ahead of me. Just I wanted it to end. So all of a sudden, I could understand why you can take the very last step. And luckily, that thought scared me. And I stumbled back and I climbed over the fence. And I'm not sure if you've ever been there, but it's all around Australia. When you go to these beautiful views, these cliffs, there's signs everywhere saying, if you're in mental distress, call Lifeline. We're here 24/7. And even in that moment, I still told myself, I don't have a problem. And not until like a week later, I was pacing up and down Manly Beach again. Barefooted, by the way, but without, you know, even thinking about it. And I realized, okay, I'm at this intersection here. You know, I can keep doing what I'm doing, pacing up and down the beach for forever, but it's not going to change anything about the situation. It's going to make things worse. I'll go deep down the rabbit hole and I won't come out. I felt that, no, sorry about that.
The joys of a car park chat.
That's yeah, that's it. I felt that, you know, if I want to have a different outcome, if I want to start feeling differently, I'm going to have to start making different choices. And there's only one person that can do that, and that's myself. And there was still one very good friend that I knew from growing up in my hometown in the Netherlands. She moved to Sydney as well. She's now actually living around the corner from me. And she was already seeing this mental health and spiritual coach in Queensland for a while. And, you know, until that time, it was way out of my comfort zone, you know, like I would just, you know, tell you go hug a tree, float away or a magic carpet. But doing any of that stuff is, you know, it's a no-go for me. But I was, you know, I was rock bottom. I had nothing else to come up with. So like, you know what, I'm going to come with. I'll see what happens. And that was kind of the start of my, you know, my own healing process, even though I didn't realize it at the time yet, because I had a lot of resistance to it. But that's when I first started to share and feel that relief of actually sharing your story with someone else, and started to get tools in return. Because, you know, one of the, like, the thing you do when you start to push people away and you only have that self-negative talk left is your problems become bigger and bigger and your solutions become smaller and smaller, because it's only your own bubble left. And when you start sharing, all of a sudden that bubble grows, because there's people pointing in directions that you never would have thought of. Like, hey, maybe you should try this, or hey, I've been through this as well. I tried this and this. And all of a sudden there's like a whole variety of new things you can try. And it's a long process. It's definitely not easy. There's a lot of things that I needed to do that I was very uncomfortable with, but it's always in the things that I felt most uncomfortable that I got the most. So the things I was, you know, always making fun of, or, you know, just saying like, I will never do that, it was those things that actually made me feel the best. So yeah, that was the journey out of it.
And I think, like you've described, when you come from a country where you really don't have to want for much or want for anything, and come to another country here in Australia, where again, we're very, very fortunate and privileged to not have to want for much, many of us. There's almost this deep-seated sort of guilt of not wanting to complain or not wanting to, you know, admit that you have an issue when you know there are so many other people who are far worse off. But just that simple act of opening up and realizing that it's okay to feel what you're feeling, and it doesn't, yeah, I guess it doesn't make your emotions any less valuable based on the history you've had and, you know, the life you've been able to live to that point.
No, definitely. That's so true. As in, I think what you said is spot on. Like, a lot of people feel like, you know, my problems are not big enough, I shouldn't share them. But a problem is a problem. And when you're mentally struggling, you're mentally struggling. It doesn't matter what the issue is, it's your problem. So and you're just human as well. Like, you're born with these emotions, so you're fully allowed to show them whenever you need. So yeah, more than right. And it's the other side as well. Like, a lot of people feel like because they haven't been through anything big themselves, they're not the right person to talk to. But it's not about what you've been through. It's just about having, you know, a listening ear. So even if you don't say anything in reply, or you just say like, hey man, I'm so sorry for you that you have to go through this, I'm here for you if you want to chat, that's enough already. Like, a lot of people feel like because they've never been into a situation like that, or they're not like a mental health coach or whatever, they're not eligible to talk to, so they just don't ask. Always ask. And you don't have to have the most perfect answers. It's just about, you know, giving that person you know, a safe bubble to just unload their story, and that's all that's necessary for a start. Yeah.
It's not having the answers, it's having the capacity to listen.
Yeah, exactly. For sure. Like, that's the biggest relief already. And I think if we can just make each other feel a little bit more comfortable with doing both, you know, sharing, knowing that it's safe to share your story and that you're just human, you're fully allowed to have emotions and show vulnerability. It has nothing to do with being man or woman. And on the other side, you don't have to be a psychologist to you know, to have the conversation. You could just ask anyone, like, hey, are you okay? Like, I just noticed that something might be off. It's perfectly fine.
What do you think it did to your own sense of self and your own identity? You've gone from being the soldier to the backpacker. Who were you by the end of this journey? What did you discover?
funny enough, I think now I'm finally myself. It sounds so cliche, but I think the army and in construction, I was far away removed from myself. It was like a chapter, but it was like a learning curve to, you know, come to the point where you really start to discover yourself. And I think this whole process has taught me to, you know, search for who I really am, what I want, what I can do, what it is that I like, what my passion is, what my fire is. Because I think it's one of the most important things in life to feel that fire for something. I think a lot of people are pretty numb. We just live a life just to live a life because we think this is how we're supposed to be getting from A to B. We just do it just, you know, day by day. I have to do this because then I can pay my bills. But there's no passion, there's no fire. And I think along the way, by going through all these processes of self-discovery, of going through the hardships, I really could fine-tune what it is that I want and what I don't want and what really sets my heart on fire. And this is one of those things. Like I really started to discover that finding my niche, you know, doing what I do right now, sets my soul on fire. It makes me even when I'm definitely hurting right now, but still it gives me energy. So that's definitely something it has given me, and that's definitely something I want to show other people as well. Like, it might be really uncomfortable, especially at the start, to do things you don't want to do and to face yourself with the things you don't want to see or hear. But it's exactly everything you need to fine-tune what it is that you do want and that you do what you can do. I mean, you can do anything you want, pretty much. Like, again, another cliche, but this is what I want to show again by doing these extreme barefoot walks. Whatever you set your mind on, you can do it.
We wanted to take a quick break from the episode to let you know about our ultimate free foot health resource. If you're listening, you've probably already started the journey towards improving your foot and movement health, but if you're still wearing conventional shoes most of the time, that's anything cushioned, heeled, narrow, or rigid, it's kind of like taking one step forward and two steps back. Knowing what shoe is right for you, though, can be super confusing. That's why we made the Guide to Foot Freedom. We've taken everything our team of foot health experts have learned over the years and synthesized it into one handy manual, packed with all you need to know about unleashing the natural power of your foundation. You'll learn how to understand your feet, the truth about modern footwear, the five F's for finding natural footwear, plus a step-by-step guide with training videos to help you assess your foot function and improve it so you can safely and seamlessly transition into shoes that will finally give your feet freedom. The best part is, like I said, it's absolutely free. Just head to thefootcollective.com and click learn to find the free ebook, The Guide to Foot Freedom. You'll find the link in the show notes. Now back to the episode.
It's funny, the barefoot walking and just, you know, whether you do it barefoot or not, it is a really good symbol of what you're talking about, because I think, like you said, a lot of people are stuck in this rat race where A to B every single day is the same. It's the same beginning and the same end. It's the same journey every single day. And the simple act of going for a walk allows you to choose where you want that A and B to be on that walk, yeah. Where you want to start and where you want to finish. And I've, you know, personally got I see a lot of alignment with our own stories. You know, I was stuck in a job, that I'd been doing for, you know, since I was 19. And it was, you know, what I thought was my purpose and my passion, but slipped to a place where I felt like I was on that rat wheel. And it was actually through, you know, my best mate, who I'm now running the Foot Collective with, Jim, that I discovered the simple act of barefoot walking. And we'd go for a barefoot walk every morning. And, you know, just that simple act of obviously reconnecting with your foundation, but just getting yourself up every morning, jumping through a cold shower and then going for that walk and giving yourself some discomfort and then setting yourself on a small trek where you choose the beginning and you choose the end and you walk for as long as you feel like you want to walk for. Yeah, it was really freeing, I think. And it's something that I, you know, still do to this day. And try to mix up, you know, every morning where I walk, where I start and where I finish, trying to, keep it fresh and keep it interesting. That freeing sort of those steps are what I think helped free me from the job that I was doing and helped me find my purpose as well. It just so happened to be all about feet, but you know, it was definitely a really crucial part to helping me get there. And what do you think it is about the walking and the barefoot walking in particular that has helped you?
Well, you already mentioned a few things, but it's like with the walking, like you said, you can set your own pace. You set your own goal. So like when we're so stuck in a certain way of living, this is the one thing you can do to change that. That already changes your whole mindset. So one, it's a way of changing your day. Two, it's a way of kind of clearing your mind for some reason. Like it can be like meditative. And I mean, like it's the exercise. I love that you said, you know, the cold shower as well. Like it's all part of getting, what I mean by getting uncomfortable. All we do is make our lives as comfortable as possible, but there's like zero growth in that comfortable zone. So taking a cold shower in the morning like you do, or going for that walk as exercise, rewires like your whole nervous system. It's maybe a little bit uncomfortable, but you get the sense of achievement out of it, which gives you like energy to do something different. But there's all these little things that come to it. And, you know, with even we always, if we want to change things in our life, we always think about the biggest thing, but it's always the small things that actually make us want to like change something. So it's even already setting yourself the goal to go for a walk. You know, that's already some like a step out of your whole comfort zone and out of your normal routine. And especially if you just take off your shoes, because we're so used to force our feet into something that doesn't even fit just because society thinks it looks good. Like why? So it's like a whole it's a thing for life. We try to force ourselves into something that doesn't fit. We feel really uncomfortable. We start to misshape ourselves to, you know, to fit in different places. It's the same for our feet. So as soon as you give your two pillars that you stand on that freedom again, then all of a sudden you start to feel that freedom again. But there's so many benefits to it. And, you know, when like there's all this scientific proof as well. So now, you know, we need scientific proof for it to say, okay, but then it's right. You know, if we can read an article that says we've done the research and this is what it says, this is what your body does, then okay, I can believe it. Before it was like hippie talk, now it's scientifically proven that once you start walking barefoot and your feet touch the earth like they're supposed to, again, your body, your whole nervous system starts to respond in a way that it starts to create all these positive chemicals in your body. You can just feel it straight away. It's funny.
You have to feel it. I think we have people ask us all the time, where's the evidence for this? And do you believe in grounding or do you believe in earthing? And, you know, show us the proof that it's good to walk barefoot. And, you know, while there is a lot of evidence out there, often my response is just do it and tell me it doesn't feel good. Okay, if you've got dysfunction and pain, then it's going to be harder to access. But if you can get yourself to a place where you can do it. And tell me it doesn't feel good.
Yeah. Well, and the dysfunction and pain as well, like, of course, there's a million different cases, but most dysfunction and pain comes from your two pillars being forced into something that doesn't fit. Because if your feet don't get the space to stand how they want to stand, your ankles, your knees, your hips, your lower back, your shoulders, your neck, everything gets out of line. So you start to get like all these different, you know, mental aspects, physical aspects. So, yeah, I think once you start walking barefoot a little bit more, maybe those, you know, physical dysfunctions start to feel better. Just give it a go. And, you know, a big in-between step is barefoot shoes. You know, I'm, you know, it's not doable for everyone to walk on your actually barefoot. You know, the CBD of Sydney or Melbourne or Brisbane is probably not the best place to walk barefoot. But then you've got barefoot shoes, and everyone, when you talk about barefoot shoes, thinks about the shoes that your toes stick out. You know, I'm not saying they're not good, but these days you have, you know, a lot of, like, a big variety of barefoot shoes that you can already feel like, okay, so if my feet actually get the space to grow back to the actual space, I actually start to align better and feel better. So there's all these tiny steps you can take to just try it and see if it works for you, how it makes you feel.
Yeah, absolutely. So you found this love for walking. You've started to sort of rediscover yourself and, you know, heal some of those wounds. And then you decide to walk from Cairns to Sydney. I mean, it's a pretty big leap. What sort of drove you to do something like that?
So it actually started in 2019. I did base camp of Mount Everest barefoot. And that's where, wow, like, on that mountain is where the barefoot Dutchman is pretty much born. Like, coming out of my own mental health chapter, I wanted to treat myself. I wanted to, you know, treat myself for the hard work I've done to, you know, come out of that mental health chapter. And traveling, like I said, was always my go-to thing. So I wanted to travel again. Nepal, the highest mountain in the range, like the Himalayas, the highest mountain in the world, the Mount Everest. Just wanted to see it. And because of my travels before, like I said, I fully realized how lucky and blessed I am. And I always felt that sense of, I want to do something in return for people that are less fortunate. So I wanted to go to Nepal and do something for the people living in the remote communities of Nepal. And I wanted to physically and mentally challenge myself again, because it, like, something the army really taught me is, when you physically and mentally challenge yourself, when you think you can't go any further, is when they said, like, you're only at 10% of what you can actually achieve. And it was true. You know, they would force you to go way past your comfort zone to only realize that's like a barrier I put there myself. And then this magic, this power inside of you gets released. Like, holy hell, but if I can do this, what else can I do? To find out that there are no barriers. Like, you're mentally and physically capable of doing so much more than make yourself believe. So I wanted to feel that again. So I decided to do base camp of Mount Everest, raise money for the people in Nepal, everything coming together. But then, like, quite rapidly after that, it's like, okay, but if you want to raise funds and awareness, you have to come up with something better than just doing base camp of Mount Everest, because, you know, a lot of people do it. Like, it's a challenge, but a lot of people do it. And I was still pacing up and down Queenscliff to Shelly Beach barefooted. And on one day, I realized, or I thought about, you know, I'm pretty sure no one's ever done that barefoot, because why would you? Like, it's super uncomfortable. And that was my little eureka moment. It's okay, cool. I want to be the first person ever to do that barefoot. That will do the trick of, you know, raising the extra awareness. And I get to physically and mentally challenge myself even more. And when I reached base camp and I touched that big rock, that's when, you know, that realization came in, like, hey, I've got something here. It's as simple as using my two bare feet and willpower now that creates a safe space for someone else, or could, like, create change for someone else. Coming back to Australia, my struggles, you know, I still had to work on it. And at some point, you know, I dove into the numbers of depression, of suicide amongst men, especially in Australia. It's massive. And, you know, I really felt the urge of you know, doing something on that sense. Like, I had a story to share, my own mental health chapter. I had my army background. I now had these two bare feet that I could use. So I thought, okay, I'm going to walk through the most densely populated area of Australia, the East Coast, to walk through as many towns, cities, and communities as possible to spread the message about men's mental health, how it needs attention, and how it's perfectly fine to speak up whenever you're in need. And that ended up being like a Guinness World Record. And I just got lucky that from day one in Cairns, the media just got hold of it, and they just kept sharing the story. And, like, the story started to grow and gave me, like, a platform to share my message and that of all the people that I met along the way to actually create change in living rooms of people that might need to hear it at that time.
So cool, man. So cool. Thank it's you. A tough place to start that journey as well. I lived up in Cairns for a year, and it's stinking hot. It's humid. Yep. There's big ass snakes and spiders and
crocodiles.
Yeah.
It's the Brewers Highway killed me. It's like, if I would have known up front that the Brewers Highway was going to be like the Brewers Highway is, I would have never even thought about this. But the first 2,000 k's, so from Cairns to Gympie, is just one road,
and it's boring as anything.
Part of the road is, you know, it's like it's the rocks on tar.
Yeah,
that's it. So that's like this. It's not smooth. It's just rocks constantly. So it's like I was in so much pain for most of the time. If, like I said, if I would have known up front it was going to be like that, no way in hell I would have done it. But I wanted a challenge, and it's a challenge that does the trick of raising the awareness. So it's definitely done the trick.
Yeah, amazing, man. And I guess that 2,000 k journey probably gave you a lot of confidence heading into this next world record attempt that the Mojave Desert's got nothing.
It's funny though. Like after Australia, I said I would never do this again. Like it ended up being 3,019 k's, which is, you know, far over the old world records. Like no one's gonna top this. I'm safe. And then, like, not even 3 years later, I'm doing this again. So I must have forgotten how freaking difficult it was back then, because I'm hurting a lot. But it's, you know, there's not a single cell in my body that thinks about not doing it, because I know that's actually making a change. I would be stupid not to go through this again, I think.
How are the feet?
Oh, they're terrible. For some reason, in Australia, I had not one single wound on my feet. They were like really bruised, like the nerve endings on my feet were completely bruised because of the Brewers Highway. But now from day two, because it started raining straight away and I was walking on concrete, and concrete is like sandpaper. So my really tender feet, because I didn't walk a lot barefoot in Amsterdam, the skin started chafing all the way off. So now I had these wounds that started to get infected. They don't get time to heal. So this is day 25, and I've been walking on wounds for 25 days right now. I can tell you it's not really comfortable. But yeah, I have to deal with it now.
What is going on in your head then? Is, you know, as you're taking those steps, and I think everyone's walked with a cut on their foot and probably knows how uncomfortable a little cut is, but yeah, walking on bruised and battered paws, and yeah, what are you doing in your head there as you're taking those steps to keep taking the next one?
Knowing that I'm not doing this just for myself, that there's like a purpose behind it, and the purpose gives me, you know, like an energy, like a fire, that there's no way in hell I won't do it. So for me, there's only one way for this to stop, and that's just by getting to the finish line. So I know that in my mind, I just, you know, cut the big cake into small pieces. If I think about eating the whole cake at once, I go nuts, I will get sick. You know, no one can finish a whole cake by themselves in one go. So I just take it one day by the time. I just take it 5 or 10 Ks by the time. If I reach the 10 Ks, okay, cool. It's another 10 closer to the finish line. Let's see what I can do more. I just try to fill my day that way and go with the pain I have. And I know as well with the pain. So this is what I want to show people as well, that regardless of what life is going to throw at you, mentally and physically, you can take it. It may seem when you wake up and you know you're going to have to get through a day like that again, it may seem like there's going to be no end. But by the end of the day, you're one day closer of coming out of it. And it's the same for me. I just know it's going to be a lot of days, and some are going to be good, some are going to be bad, some are going to be a mix of everything. But I know by the end of the day, I'm one day closer to finish it and coming out of it. And there's only one way of getting, you know, to the finish, and it's getting through it. There's no hiding. There's no backing out. There's just, you know, facing it and accepting what is. And for me right now, it's accepting the pain for what is. It's not going to go anywhere. And it's just finding ways of easing the pain in my mind. You know, and so it's in all the little things, reading, like listening to a book or listening to a podcast, you know, finding the white painted lines. If there's no traffic coming, that's the cloud. You know, it's having a really good support unit around me right now. In Australia, it's by myself. Now I have my girlfriend here as well, which is absolutely amazing. That gives support. You know, it's the people that stop on their way and just to check in on me if I'm okay. Most of them offering their flip-flops and shoes, but unfortunately, I can't take them. But yeah, it's just knowing that, you know, there's only one way, and that's just, you know, going towards it.
Well, mate, I'm really, honoured that you have taken the time today to have a chat, and yeah, just stoked to hear that you've taken those steps yourself, and now you're helping others do the same. 7.5 million barefoot steps is what you've sort of got ahead of you.
Yeah.
More than 240 days this journey is going to take from LA to New York, and you're crossing deserts, mountains. I'm sure you'll see some wildlife along the way. But
yeah,
if people want to follow your journey, where can they stay in touch? And if they want to donate, how can they give to this awesome effort?
Well, the most important thing is, of course, the donations. Together with Barbarics, which is actually a barefoot shoe brand. You know, that's why I'm so passionate about the barefoot shoes as well. I think it's, you know, it's the next best thing. And I found an amazing, you know, partnership with having a barefoot shoe brand with me. And together with them, we started Brave Men Talk. And that's where you can donate as well. So bravementalk.com is where you can find all the information where you can donate. The money goes directly to, men's mental health charities like Movember, which is actually an Australian charity as well, like originally now it's all over the globe. And if they want to follow the journey, it's mainly on Instagram, and it's called The Barefoot Dutchman. And for some reason, the is very important. Without the, you can't find it. So The Barefoot Dutchman. We'll be sharing, you know, every day what's going on, what's happening, you know, all the ups and downs, all the adventures, and, you know, everything that's happening on the way.
Amazing, mate. And I'd encourage everyone to give it a follow. We'll include the links in the description of the episode. But yeah, if you follow along with the Barefoot Dutchman online and, you know, you happen to spot him on the side of the highway, jump out of your car and join him for a K.
Yes, please.
You know, I think it'd be nice to give you some company on that journey. And just stoked to see how it goes. And I'm sure once you make it to New York City, we'll have to catch up for another chat and let everyone know how it went.
Yeah, we'll love to. And thanks for giving me the opportunity to share the story here. You know, this is how the story spreads. This is how it gets to people's living rooms that need to hear it in this moment, and also motivates them to maybe take different steps if they want to have a different outcome. So thanks for providing that safe space. And man, it was a good chat. I love hearing the Aussie accent again.
There's a hint of it in yours as well.
Yeah, I'm losing it a little bit though, but it's still there a little bit.
But we'll have to keep chatting just to freshen you up on all the lingo.
Love that.
Thanks for tuning in to the Restore to Explore podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, we'd really appreciate you leaving a review wherever you're listening. That's the best way to support us and to help us reach more people. If you're after more free TFC education or training, looking for any of our TFC tools, natural footwear discounts, or you want specialized guidance on your foot health journey from a trusted TFC health professional, head to thefootcollective.com. All of the important links are in the show notes of the episode.